This is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia, with our 11th podcast on fly fishing for trout. Thus far, we've covered the small and large streams in a seasonal sequence starting early in the year. Today, we're going to go from early September all the way into the end of the season. Now, when I'm saying the larger streams, medium-larger streams we're talking about, here in the east, we'd be talking about Penn's Creek. Up in New York, it'd be the Chateauguay, the Beaver Kill. Over New Hampshire, even the Androscoggin is an excellent larger stream. Out west, I'm talking about streams like the Madison, Yellowstone, the Gallatin, West Gallatin down in the canyon. Lower Clark's Fork down below Missoula is an excellent large stream. Now, the tackle I use in this, out in the west, I use a 9-foot 6-weight with a delicate tip for almost all of this type fishing, except when I get into betas and the trichos. There I drop down to a 9.06 or even sometime an 8.02. In the east, I use a 9.04 almost across the board for the bigger flies, but then again, when I get into the betas and the trico here in the east, I do drop down to an 8.06. To an 8.02. Okay, let's start with our dry flies first, the way we've been doing all the way through it. In early September on into the middle of October, many of the rich streams still have real good trico hatches. I was teaching advanced college class here close to home several years ago, and the boys in there said, well, Harry, give us a class on how to tie and how to fish the trichos. Well, I was fishing trichos a whole lot at that time, so I thought, well, that's a simple thing. I'll just go home and rummage through my box and see what I'm using and then tell them how to fish it. So when I was digging around in my box, I found out I actually use 11 different trico patterns. Now, I don't really think that's necessary, but you know how that goes. I do taper down to 7 or 8X on the trico. Now, this is a two-hour hatch. From the time the duns pop off till the spinners fall, it's about 2 hours. We talked about it earlier, early in the season, June, something like that. These flies will start as early as 7 o'clock in the morning. But now, this time of the year, it may be noon before the duns come off. But it's still a two-hour, hatch. The fish by this time have been hit hard. I mean, you really want to go in on your hands and knees to fish for these guys because they are very selective on pattern, but they are extremely selective on drag. That's one reason I'm going to 8X on most of this. Now, I use Marinero's Puddle Cast. Vince was one of my heroes in all this. In fact, one day Vince and I were fishing a little spring creek, and there was one brown I'd been working on for probably about 15 to 20 minutes, and he kept on feeding and feeding. I couldn't even get him to look at my flies. Well, that's not true. He'd look at them, but he'd just thumb his nose on them and go on away. So Vince was sitting up on the bank under an apple tree, so I went up and sat down beside him. I said, Vince, that's the toughest brown trout I think I've ever seen. While I was sitting beside Vince, my arm sort of fell over my knee, and at that time I was using a watch that had a sweep second hand. And I timed that guy. In 60 seconds, he took 67 flies, and I had showed him probably all 11 of those patterns. Vince said, well, maybe you're getting drag that you can't see. He says, go back down and try him again, but try a different location and see if you can see if you're getting drag. I went back down, had the same fly on. He'd refused half a dozen times, but I relocated slightly upstream to give me a different angle out across the crest and stuff. Sure enough, he took it on the first drift. So this time of the year, and even on, you can get trichos even into October. That's going to be about the end of it, though. But drag conscious, spooky, you got to play the game right. Now, at this same time of the year, usually maybe a little later, let's say early October to late November, we get the betas. Now, that's the blue-winged olive. Some of the streams get a pseudocleone. The olive is a little bit bigger, maybe 18 to 20. The pseudocleone, unfortunately, is smaller. You want to go down at least to a 22 and sometime a 24 on those. My favorite flies on those are the Mr. Rapidan dry fly in an 18 and 20 and the Betas Parachute in an 18 and 22. I usually fish those on 6X or 7X. Now, you don't want to go to 7X on the big rivers out west. You just can't hold some of those big fish very well on the lower Yellowstone on 7X. overcast days, snowy days, bring them out. The most of the streams I fish, this hatch is on from about 1 in the afternoon till about 2, till about 4. And it's very much worthwhile. And you're thinking about streams that are either tailwater or spring fed. This was Marinero's favorite hatch. I told you about that. He looked me right in the eye and says, just don't you overlook those little olives. Now, because they're so demanding, I do use a lot of slackline cast. I like the puddle cast for that. One day on the I took several of my friends into a pool I knew real well in the Lower Yellowstone, and it was snowing like crazy. Olives all over the place, but it was snowing so hard you couldn't cast more than about 20 feet or you couldn't see your fly on the water. And we just caught fish all day on olives. The Lower Clark Fork down below Missoula, my son and I were floating down through there recently, and we had great fishing over there. A couple days before that, we were floating over on the Bitterroot, and we had great fishing over there. Now, something happened over in there that really kind of woke me up on all this. Some of those guys were actually cruising, and it got kind of tough because if we were floating along, if the hatch was real heavy, if they were in a back area, sometime they were actually cruising toward us. So you got to kind of use a quick draw and anticipate where they're going, or the next thing you know, they'll be right on your boat. But olives in the fall are real good. Now, there again, they're going to be in the spring-fed streams, although, actually, we're going to be talking about smallmouth here in a couple weeks. I actually get the olives on the Shenandoah River here in the fall. Do the bass feed on them? Well, little guys might, but not the big guys. Okay, let's keep on with our dry flies. Now, I've got to talk a minute about some of the terrestrials. The hoppers, the crickets are still good. You don't even have to worry about the first frost because some way or other they survive it. Because here in the east, I get good hopper fishing into early November anyway. Now, I'm talking about streams like the Beaver Kill up in New York, Smith River here down around Bassett here in Virginia. These are good, and you can do well all the way through October. Now, out in the west, we really rely on hoppers a whole lot. I like Dave Whitlock's pattern. I like Ed Shank's pattern. Those are probably my two favorite, but there are a lot of good hopper patterns. I'm kind of opinionated on the cricket. I really do prefer Ed's cricket to any of them. But you were thinking primarily about meadow streams, pasture streams, that kind of thing. The Madison up in the park, and actually even down below the park, all the way down to the islands at Varney up there above Ennis, it's good hopper fishing, especially on that western bank. In fact, that brings up a good point. You want to think about pounding the side of the river that the wind's coming from, because that's what's going to blow those hoppers in. For instance, over in Idaho, over in Henry's Fork, I've had some fantastic fishing there in the ranch water. You know, you may be out there in the day and have a terrific betas hatch and going one-on-one with them, and as the hatch peters out, a lot of those guys will move over under those undercut banks, and you can still get fantastic fishing running hoppers along those undercut banks. And by this time of the day, most of the guys have gone home because they know the hatch is over. But don't overlook the hoppers along the banks in all those big streams. Beetles and ants, I got to throw those in here. You've heard me mention the fact that I use a beetle as a hatch closer, a hatch finisher, if you don't know what I'm talking about. This is when we have a hatch like a Trico and the Betis that brings a lot of fish out, like that guy that was taking 67 flies in 60 seconds. But you get a lot of fish out that are going to feed heavily on these heavy hatches. However, when the hatch thins out on the tail end, many of these nice fish are still on feeding stations. The hatch is thinned out to where they're just not getting all the flies they want. They get a little careless, and I am very serious. I slip down to a Murray's flying beetle, believe it or not, in a size 14, take some of the biggest fish I've had, maybe even bigger than I had during the hatch. So this is good maybe for as much as an hour after those hatches are over. And on the western streams, Depew's, Ben Hart, all of those, the beetles and ants are real good in through there. Now, I don't just put an ant on and go fish the water. I'm not going to put a size 18 ant on and pound the banks. What I use the ant for is a fish that I've had him up. He's looked at everything I've shown him. He's too smart for him. Then I'll slip down to a Mr. Rapid Ant about an 18 or 20, and many of those guys will go for it. Now, nothing wrong with the tractors at this time of the year. Now, remember, we're talking from September all the way into late as the season will give you. Royal Wolf, Adams, Mr. Rapidan, all those are excellent. We use them here in the east, over on Rock Creek over in western Montana. This is an exceptionally good pattern. These are freestone streams. You're going to fish the corners. If you see somebody come up, go one-on-one with him. But if you don't see him, just fish the corners, fish the banks. Excellent patterns. Now, here comes something in the fall that really turns a lot of the fish on, and I'm talking about the Chironomid midge. Old Ross Trimmer, I used to always call them the Diptera. So anyway, it's that little tiny fly. Many of them are dark colors, but you're thinking more about the size than you are the color, and you are definitely thinking about spooky fish. So I go to 6 and 7X on this. If I've got big fish, I will not go to 8X on this with, you know, a 22-inch rainbow. I just get discouraged when I pop too many of them off. So some fellas say, well, Harry, I have trouble seeing a size 22 Griffith net on the water. Well, sure, everybody does. But a trick that I've been using for many years is to take a scientific angler indicator and chop it about a quarter of an inch off that thing, slide that on my compound knotted tapered leader, the one we call the classic leader, put that up the leader about 3 feet above the fly, put my midge on the end, and then when that thing falls on the stream on the presentation cast, I can easily spot that little chunk of SA indicator, and then I know my dry fly is just a couple feet behind that. So this helps, and does it spook the fish? I don't think so. I've taken so many fish this way, I'm a firm believer in it. Now, let me tell you about two different ways you're going to encounter fish feeding on midges. There's one particular stream I fish regularly that has, now we're talking about pretty good sized streams here, it has a pretty good riffle coming in at the head of it. These fish, in the evening, they'll feed on, we'll say, the Betis hatch in the middle of October. Let's say middle of October, they'll feed heavily on the Betis hatch till about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The Betis kind of fizzle out. The last hour of daylight, these fish will move over into those riffly-type areas. Now, I'm not talking about heavy roly-poly riffle. I'm talking about when they flatten out. And they'll feed on, they'll lock on a feeding station and sip in these natural midges, these Chironomid midges. But they'll hold on a feeding station just like they did on the Betis and sip them in as they're coming along. Now, in this particular pool, which sort of proves everything I'm going to throw at you now, that riffle broadens out into a very, very wide, long, slow pool. And what happens here, the current is so slow that those trout now are not going to hold on feeding station. They're still feeding on the same fly. That same midge, but they'll go out and cruise around. Some people call this the pond. They'll go out and cruise around these big still bodies of water, not even 50 feet when they come to them. Now, if you can't actually see the fish, try to anticipate a cruising path and drop it out in front of him. Depending on the size of the stream, you may or may not be able to see the fish. If you can see the fish, go for him one-on-one because you got a better chance for him. But don't hesitate in dropping it out in front of him. Streams in the east that have this are Fisherman's Paradise over at Bellefont in Pennsylvania. The Firehole out west has this, especially right up there above Nez Perce. It's very good in that game. So don't overlook that. Now, we got to talk about the nymphs in the fall. Remember, we're going September till the end of the year, so you're going to play this based on the water level and the water temperature. Upstream dead drift. Let's talk about the east first. Now, I'm talking about, again, maybe something like the North Branch of the Saranac, Androscoggin, Hidden Valley of the Jackson here in Virginia, those kind of streams. That's what I'm talking about here. I usually use a fly. It's a 12 or 14. A couple of my favorites are the Murraystown Caddis Pupa and the Casual Dress. And I'm doing the upstream dead drift thing. Now, if I happen to be in a stream that has a lot of springs coming into it, one of them right here behind my fly shop in Edinburgh comes into Big Stony Creek, rich springs, you're going to have shrimp and crest bugs below that. So go one-on-one with them, upstream dead drift. If you see them working, if you don't see them working, cover the water. Now, when I get out west, I still use the same tactics, fishing the riffle corners and that kind of thing. But I go big fish hunting. Now, more to be said about that, but that's what I do. When I'm out there on these heavy runs and everything, corner of the riffle. I'll go to a size 6 on a Bitch Creek Nymph or the Murray's Roadkill, taper down to probably 3X, maybe 4X. But I'm using that upstream dead drift thing. I'm not talking about fishing water out there that's 10 feet deep. I'm talking about fishing water that's from knee deep, maybe up to chest deep, about to be the deepest I do in upstream dead drift. Now, I use a Scientific Angler indicator about up in the butt of the leader. We'll say we're using a 9-foot 3X bright butt leader, and I'll have an SA indicator up in the butt of that thing for these deep runs, and then I'll have one about a foot below it. And then on the east, I'll probably put those down a little bit closer to the fly because my water isn't quite that deep. Now, this strike you're going to try to see, you're going to cast upstream, up and across, maybe at a 10-degree angle, and try to keep a tight line on that as it drifts back. The way I teach this in my schools, especially, we use this in smallmouth fishing, yes. When I'm teaching this, I'm telling the boys to keep the line in that line hand on the presentation cast. Now, you with me now? I've made my false cast. I'm coming forward. I'm ready to drop that thing on the water. I'm keeping that line in my line hand. As it's turning over in the air, I'm putting that line under the first or second finger of my rod hand. In order to achieve that, when I'm teaching that, I tell these boys to keep that left hand within 6 inches of the rod, and then it's easy to put over there. So I'm taking up the slack as it's going by my ear. So when that thing falls on the water, I've got a tight line to it. Then after it sinks, I strip slowly. You don't want to use a short jerky strip. You want a long, slow strip based on the speed of the water, bringing that back. If you use short strips, you can't tell when you're getting a strike because that indicator's bobbing all over the place on you. But use a slow, steady strip that's coming back to you, and you can take a lot of fish with that. Now, I got to talk about the Brooks method because that is certainly the meat and potatoes for the deep, big streams out west. Charlie did not like the lines we had on the market, so he makes his own, what we would now call a high D head. If you're buying a ready-made store-bought line, it would be close to the Teeny 200. But Charlie didn't like front tapers, and he didn't like any of them we had, so naturally he had to make his own. Brooks taught me this method in holes number 1, 2, and 3 there behind the barns on the Madison. And these are deep pools, fast runs, heavy water, and your goal here is to get that thing down to the bottom. Now, again, this is very similar to a technique I teach here in my bass schools. What I tell my students is that you're casting upstream, you're wading downstream, and you're fishing the water right beside you. Now, what that means, you've got a cut out there beside you that we'll say is 10 feet deep. Well, you can wade out maybe to hip deep to it, but it's still 20 feet away. You're going to cast up and across stream at about a 10 degree, well, maybe let's say about a 20 to 30 degree angle upstream. Let that thing drop down, 20 foot cast too. Start off with about a 20 foot cast, 20 to 30, maybe 45 degrees upstream, depending on the current. The initial part of that is to let that thing sink down deeply. You're not stripping line. You're not doing anything. All you're doing is stripping. Just let it sink. I'm sorry. All you're doing is letting it sink deeply. After you get your depth, you tighten up to it with your line hand and then pivot your body as that thing is swinging by you. And if you've set yourself up properly, you are actually fishing the water right beside you. Now, I do exceptionally well with this in water from, we'll say 10 feet out to 20 feet out. If I try to push it and fish water more than 30 feet out from where I'm standing, I miss too many of the strikes. If I get a strike, I often miss the fish. So fishing water 30 feet out, you're just not going to be that successful with the Brooks method. We play it, but you'll do a whole lot better just to slip downstream about 10 feet and then run another drift up through there. In a hole, let's see, I don't know, hole number 2 behind the barns must be, oh, gosh, I don't know, 200 feet long. Well, I've seen Brooks devote 3 hours to fishing that pool. He says he wants every fish out there to see it. So this is a very effective technique. Now, back here in the east, I don't need all that powerful sinking paraphernalia. So I go to a floating line, and that's the one I refer to as a swing nymphing. It's exactly the same Brook technique that Charlie used, but so people don't get it confusing, I just call it swing nymphing. But it's the same thing. You set yourself up right beside the good water. You're casting up and across stream. Give it time to sink. Get tight to it, and you're expecting to strike, and you're going to feel the strike, you're expecting to strike right beside where you're standing. So you're wading downstream, you're casting upstream, and you're going to feel this strike, which unlike upstream dead drift nymphing you've got to see, in this technique, you're going to feel the strike. Now, I got to talk streamers before I let you go on all this. Streamers, of course, are meant to imitation. Out west, I usually use a number six Spuddler, Shank Sculpin, Whitlock Sculpin, the Murray Sculpin. I like Sculpin patterns. I like to give them what they're used to seeing. I do use some Ollie Strimps, and the Murray's Ollie Marauder has been fantastic for us in the last 5 years in the Rockies. But I seldom go any smaller than a size six out there, and I'm probably using a high D head to do this or a Teeny 200. Now, some of you have asked me what a streamer run is. All right, there's one pool just upstream from Livingston, Montana, we call Jumping Rainbow Pool. I've fished this so many years with my guide, Ray Hurley. I feel like I know it like the back of my hand. So let me just set up Jumping Rainbow Pool. Now, remember, these pools are all changed as the water changes, the high water changes, floods get them. For instance, I'm fishing one area out there now that there's an island in the middle of the river. It's about a quarter of a mile long, and it's smack dab in the middle of the Yellowstone River. In the old days, when I was fishing that thing with Ray Hurley, we had what we call the home pool and the river pool. The home pool carried about a third of the water, and the river pool, which was a booger to fish, even with a big rod and double hauling and the whole works, that was a monster. Now, floods have changed that, still got the island there, but now about a fourth of water comes around the old home pool, about three-fourths of the water comes around on the near side of that pool, and the rest just kind of filters down on the other side. So keep in mind, you may have fished, well, say you floated the River Yellowstone 2 years ago, and you had real good fishing in Jumping Rainbow, and you decide you're going to run it yourself this year. You're going to rent a boat and drift down through it. It was so good. It may change completely, but let me set it up for you so you know what a real streamer run is. Jumping Rainbow Pool is about 150 yards long, and it's about 200 feet wide. All right, we're standing on the bank on the near side of the river looking out at it. As we look, and it's sweeping away from us now. It's coming in on our left. It's sweeping away from us. The deep water is sort of the outside of the elbow, 200 feet from us, and then have another, we'll say, halfway down, 75 yards downstream, it feathers out in the tail of the pool. Okay, the riffle upstream, typical of all these big streamer runs. Now, that's what I'm trying to show you what a streamer run is. Upstream, the near side of that riffle, the water is about 2 feet deep, and it's going at a much slower rate. It's got smaller stones in the bottom. We're talking about all smaller than basketball size. All right, now halfway out in the middle of the river, we're talking about a whole lot more current. We're talking about water maybe 4 or 5 feet deep in the middle of the river now, and it's getting heavier. Boulders get good at beaver here. As we approach the far side, you're talking about water that may be 6 or 8 feet deep. Yes, it's a riffle, but it's still pushing through there. These, you'll have wheelbarrow-sized boulders in there. So that's the typical setup at the head of a pool. The streamer run is that water immediately below that riffle all the way down to the tail of the pool. All right, now here's the way I fish that guy. I'll start at the head of that thing where the water's relatively shallow on my side. I'll stay back on almost on the bank and fish that water out to about 20 feet. Now, again, I'm using a high D head or a Teeny 200. Fish it out about 30 feet and gradually strip it back. My next cast will be maybe 10 feet longer, and I'm still standing at the same place now. I haven't moved, standing there, and I'll shoot it out maybe another 10 or 20 feet. Keep on going, and reaching across with longer and longer cast till I'm reaching as far as I'm comfortable with. I'm not saying you got to double haul and shoot the whole fly line. That's for the grandstands. But just fish as long as you're comfortable with it. Now, after I've covered the head of that pool in that way, then I start wading downstream. The little sketch that I'm looking at right this second, I've got the riffle on the left-hand side, the water's flowing down to my right, the tail of my pool is on the right. I'm going to wade down that whole length of that pool. Now, I don't make shorter and longer and longer and longer cast. Here, I'm working with the full length of line of whatever I'm comfortable in casting. I'm going to cast straight across, strip it back, take a little step downstream, and I'm talking about a 2-foot step, shoot it out, strip it back. Now, What often happens as we're going through there, you might pow, 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 pick up three or four fish at a specific spot, say, well, mid-pool. You've done whatever you did, and you go ahead, pool, and you're now in the middle of the pool, and you're picking up, say, three or four pretty good fish right out there. That's what I call the sweet spot. Now, you got to mark that because that's worth making a second pass. There's one pool I fish out on the Yellowstone. There was an old ranch gate that washed up in there. Some years the hot spot was 20 feet above that gate. Sometimes the hot spot was right straight out from it, and sometimes it might be 40 feet downstream from it. But wherever you picked up those good fish, you mark that thing very carefully how far you were casting and mark it on my old gate on the far side or an old stump or whatever, a huge boulder, but you mark it. Then fish your way all the way down to the tail of that pool, and then if you've got time, you could make a second pass, but I'm a sucker. I've got to go back to that sweet spot, that hot spot out from that ranch gate, and I may make a second pass. Well, what am I talking about? Maybe 100 cast, and then I might go up and make the third cast. It's amazing how many times when you go through that sweet spot the second or third time, you'll still pick up a couple fish. I don't know why they didn't take it the first time. Now, but let me show you about this. You're making longer casts, you're fishing bigger flies, they're down deep. In order to let you know you're getting that strike, try to get in the habit of pointing your fly rod where the line is coming out of the water. Now, I don't mean splash down on the surface. I'm talking about from right to left. When you make that cast, you're stripping and the current is pulling that thing down to, in my case, down to the right because I'm sitting here looking at this pool. My pool's going from left to right in front of me. Swing your rod tip with to the point that where the line is coming out of the water. In essence, that if you're doing this properly, you've got a tight line from that line hand all the way down to the fly. In that situation, you can easily feel the slightest strike, even with that big belly you've got out there, even if that long cast. Now, when you feel that thing, you sock it to him. Get in the habit of setting the hook, not just with the rod. You definitely want to, and you want to set off the butt. You don't want to tip that tip like you're using a size 20 atom. You want to hit him on the butt of that rod, and you want to sock it to him with your left hand. This is not necessary to hit him that hard, but you want to telegraph your cast, your strike through that long line as quickly as you can and cover that whole thing down to the tail of the pool. Now, that's what I call a streamer, Ron. Now, it still plays the same way back here in the east, although we're talking about smaller streams. Even though we're talking about big streams today, our big streams in the east are not as big as the big streams in the west. Consequently, here in the east, maybe down the O'Connell Lefty in North Carolina, Pence Creek we were talking about, those kind of things, I'll go down in the smaller size fly, maybe the Olive Strength and a 10, the Pearl Marauder and a 10, that kind of thing, and I'll be using a 9-foot 2X leader, and I will go to a floating line on most of this. Now, in some cases, if we've picked up quite a bit of water in the fall, I will go to a sink tip 3 line, and now, again, I'm using a 4 weight, so that'll pull it down pretty quickly. But in most of the cases, I'm going to be using a floating line. Now, that pretty well finishes our podcast on trout. In a couple of weeks, we're going to switch over to bass, and I'm going to be doing the same sequence. I think I've got, at this stage, 8 podcasts for you. But we're going to do the same thing. We'll talk about the food. We'll talk about the tackle. Then we're going to go through a seasonal sequence starting in the spring and fish our way all the way through to the fall. If you have any questions or comment on this, just call me at Murray's Fly Shop. This is Harry Murray. Ring me at 540-984-4212. Thank you very much.